Welcome to Sport Flight Magazine. Please bring all seats to an upright position. Seatbelts should be fastened at all times due to possible air turbulence. As Sport Flight previews and reviews the good, the bad, and the ugly world of sports, Sport Flight's humor, entertainment, and candor will propel you to speeds of 600 miles per hour and reach altitudes of 30,000 feet. Now, sit back, relax, and experience a different sports perspective.
Welcome aboard this edition of Sport Flight FYI, sponsored by UrbanCollegeSports.com. Today's top stories in the good, bad, and ugly world of sports. The NBA season opens. Scores and stories from Sport Flight's NBA analyst Sean Bush. Continued Major League Baseball musical chairs at the general manager level. Week number 8 in the NFL. Dramatic finishes. A shutout for old time's sake and mysterious play. Week number 9 predictions from the NFL. Black college scores. Sport Flight's bronze pioneer. Notre Dame extends Charlie Weiss's contract after a 5-2 start. Tyrone Willingham started 8-0 and receives a boot after 3 years of a 5-year contract. Is there an imbalance here, or, as some people call it, racism? But first, we begin with the NBA new dress code, which some have labeled racist, out of touch, and oftentimes meaningless. Sean, the new dress code, does it have merit? Is it racist?
Let's be honest. It's mostly black players in the NBA. And I think when you the more you really look at it and think about it is, I initially had a problem with the whole dress code as far as you have to be wearing suits on the plane, on the bus, and all that stuff. The thing about it is, most of the players do that anyway, so that's really no big deal. I think what they're trying to do is, it's almost kind of like what the NFL is trying to do as far as with uniforms. The difference is, they are really trying to take the personality out of the league. A lot of people, and mostly it's corporate sponsors, don't like seeing players dress up the way that they are dressing up, because some of the players was just dressing like they just got out of bed and went to the game just to sit on the bench because they know they wasn't playing. So I don't personally mind as far as putting the style back into the game. I think they just went overboard by just eliminating all personalities of people. You know, the chains, the headphones coming off the buses. You know, people get into sync. People get into a rhythm. They gotta get their mind focused for a game. And sometimes music or watching DVDs help them get focused for that game. So that part, I think that's when they went really overboard with it. He had a good start. He had a good intention, but he just went ahead and just took it. And then the comments he was saying is, you are going to conform to my rules or else. That's where David Stern just went, I believe. He went overboard and over the edge.
Well, number one, let me answer the question by asking a question. Does the NBA have an image problem? Number one. And the answer to that is yes, of course they have an image problem. And when is it wrong for an employer to make decisions which include the employee's appearance? I have no problem with it whatsoever. The NBA is the youngest league of the three major professional leagues, be it the NFL as well as Major League Baseball. And with that comes some inherent problems with the young players wanting to do as they so desire. It's somewhat similar to a parent with a child. you have to lay down the law at times. They may not like it. They may not appreciate it. But it's in the best interest of the family. And
but,
the family in this particular instance is the NBA.
But that's where the problem entails, because that's exactly the way it's that the commission is doing. It's you are
and what's
a
the problem
child.
With them? What's
They're
the
not
problem?
Children.
These are young men making 25 $50 million over a 3 to 5 year period.
They're still grown
men. What is the problem with guidelines from your employer? We all have guidelines when we work with various companies. Various companies have dress codes. As a professional, if you are a salesperson or an executive, it is not acceptable for you to go into a meeting or to see one of your accounts dressed in jeans or even in khaki slacks or what have
okay,
you.
Okay, okay.
You have to have a business attire. So why
dress
is it
code,
so out of the norm for these players to have guidelines with regards to their dress?
Has their dress code, their dress code.
Had their dress not been out of bounds to some degree, then there would not have been a need for this dress code.
Their dress code is their uniforms when they play the game. That's their dress code. Their dress code is the uniforms that they go ahead and play.
No, they represent the league.
No, no, that I disagree with.
And representing the league, they must dress in an appropriate manner.
I understand.
I applaud the commissioner for laying this law down. It's about time that someone stepped in and advised them this is the way it will be, and if you do not like it, you can leave.
See,
do you
that's
expect
the problem.
Do you expect any of them to leave?
That's the problem. No, I don't expect none of them
okay.
to leave.
Exactly.
But the problem is you go ahead and take in their dress code, like I said, is their uniform. What they wear on and off the court is what they wear off the court is their business.
No, it's not. It's
yes,
business.
It is.
Business.
Just because,
it is,
just
it,
because
it is. When they are traveling or if they are at the arena, it is the business of the owners of the league.
You don't get no dress
business.
Code when you have to go on a business trip when you're on a plane. You don't have a dress code in regular corporate America. People just choose to wear business attire. But
no.
They don't have to wear business attire when they're going on a plane. When they're on a plane.
If your employer tells you you do, you do. Because I have been involved in that, and I have been in corporate America. You do. Yes, you do.
Well,
if they inform you that they want you to dress in a certain manner when you are traveling, that is what you do.
Well,
the employer has that right because the employer is the one who owns the company, who owns the league, who owns the individual teams. I have no problem with it whatsoever.
But you know what? Here's where I have a huge problem with this is. Well, they're saying now it's going ahead and gearing to this is target towards hip hop. And one thing you must agree on that the NBA, and we talked about this on the NBA preview cast that we did a couple of days ago. The NBA is the most progressive league as far as getting stuff done. They were the first league to really initiate and embrace hip-hop by bringing the hip-hop community into the game as far as with promos and events of that sort of nature. And they were selling towards the hip-hop community. The problem is the corporate money that is coming in there does not like all the hip-hop in the league and trying to take it out. So basically, they are taking away what they are actually shying away from what helped them get the explosion in the early 90s.
What you're saying is they are being hypocritical.
Yeah, they're being hypocritical.
That has some merit. That does have some merit. But once again, they, meaning the owners of the league, and the ambassador for the owners of the league happens to be the commissioner, and that's David Stearns. They have the right to inform their employees as to what they will and will not accept. And I just happen to agree with it. I don't think it's racism as much as
no,
a
I don't think it's
gap.
I don't think it's racism. And this, and this
so
conversation has proven that.
Absolutely.
This conversation has proven
Absolutely.
That. Like I said, I don't have problems with parts of it. But I believe most of it was was going overboard. I honestly do believe that. And that's going to be a generation gap between us.
I think it's a very lax or relaxed code.
Relax? You can't wear headphones? You telling me that's relax? You think it needs to be stricter? What other stricter way you want them to do?
Well, he could have mandated that they have a shirt and tie whenever they are in the stadium. If they're not playing, they would have to have shirt and tie whenever they travel, be it on the bus from the hotel to the arena or in planes. It could have been much, much more strict, much more so. And you have to remember that they are in business. They, the NBA, are in business to make a profit. And if the sponsors
The
NBA is the lesser of the three major sports.
The NBA is hurting for money.
No, it's not hurting for money. But as far as the people who attend the games, as far as the people who, for the most part, sponsor the games, these are people who are not in tune with, as you call it, the hip-hop. And a lot of this is not necessarily hip-hop. A lot of this came from the prisons. They are stating or labeling it as hip-hop, with their pants hanging down to their knees, with the long T-shirts, with all the bling-bling. No, and then the do-rags and the caps on top of the do-rags. If they really understood how they look, and when they become older and they look back, some of them will regret how they did look. So I have no problems with it whatsoever. And once again, as I stated before, it's not as much of a racial problem as it is a generational problem. Well, of those teams that opened last night, obviously the big hitter was the San Antonio Spurs. Was there anything that was different or that you expected that perhaps did not show up with the Spurs?
No, if everything that we talked about in our NBA preview podcast was absolutely right, the bench did great. Finley came led the bench with 16 points. You got Ori going with 7 points, 8 rebounds. Nick Van Exel didn't do too much. He only played 14 minutes, but you're going to have a constant rotation going on with that bench of somebody stepping up each and every day. So Denver played very well. Nene being hurt is actually a little cause for concern, because their front court, I believe, was very well with Nene, Martin, and Camby. Now, Nene's hurt. That's going to be putting more a lot of pressure between Camby and Martin, both who are injury prone. So that's something to look into and see, especially over the next week. But the one thing that showed up was the tenacity of the Dallas Mavericks coming back from a game that they were pretty much losing the whole game. And then Dirk just turned on the fire switch, and he was just shooting unconsciously and just hitting threes from every angle towards the later part of that fourth quarter.
Well, you were correct about Sacramento when we did our prediction earlier. I believe I had Sacramento coming in third in their division, and I believe you had them either fourth or fifth.
I had them last.
Oh, you had them last?
Yeah, I had them last.
Okay. So it does appear one game does not a season make, understandably so, but it does give you a little insight as to what you can look forward to throughout the balance of the season.
First impressions, first game is really going to set forth as far as at least for the next month how things is going to kind of shake out and kind of how it looks. So it's going to be real interesting with Sacramento. I don't know. It could have been the bright yellow jerseys. I don't know. It could have been they was getting blinded by their own jerseys. But they did not shoot well. Bibby only scored 8. Bonzi Wells only scored 6. Their leading scorer was Petrovic with 18. You're not going to win a game if your leading scorer is scoring 18.
Well, Bibby is going to be the catalyst. He's the impact player on that team. And if Bibby is not doing well, then the team is not going to do well.
Absolutely.
Regarding the opening of the NBA season, we have the two Wonderlust boys back in the league. Well, Larry Brown didn't leave. It's just that he did his traditional changing of teams. Larry Brown with the New York Knicks, and now Phil Jackson has returned to the scene of the crime. You know, they say you can never go home again, so we'll see if that holds true for Phil Jackson. Of the two, who do you expect to have the better record at the end of the season between Larry Brown and Phil Jackson?
Easily, I think the Lakers will, without a doubt. East Conference is very tough, and they're going to get beat a lot as far as with the Knicks. They're going to get beat up in their own division, and then they're going to go outside of their division in that conference and get beat a lot. So easily, I believe the Lakers is going to have a better record because I do believe the Lakers are going to make it to the playoffs and the Knicks are not. So just because he is going back home, but he still has players who know his offense. So that's going to help.
So you're referring to the triangle offense?
As far as triangle offense with the Lakers. With Larry Brown, he got a whole bunch of new players. He has a whole team.
He's just new to the team.
He's new to the team, so he's going to put his philosophy down, and it's going to be up to those players to get get quickly adjusted to his philosophy. So I think there's going to be a difficult transition. And then also, you're also really going to have to worry about a person who's going to have a stop sign as far as being very worried about is Eddie Curry. Eddie Curry and that whole heart thing, we don't know. I'm hoping nothing goes wrong with Eddie Curry. I really do.
Yeah, basketball aside, I hope that nothing happens to the young
man. I hope nothing really happens to him.
But we've all heard and read about players just dropping dead on the floor, and you can go back to the Reggie Lewis's and the
Hank Gathers. Yeah.
All of those type of situations that have occurred. So that was a big risk taken by Isaiah with the Knicks to go out and make that trade with Eddie Curry. Now, he has stated that the doctors have cleared Curry,
mm-hmm.
but Chicago was reluctant without some type of test, well, actually the DNA.
Exactly.
Which Eddie Curry and his agent refused to do, and so that precipitated the trade.
And I'm going to call this out right now. I believe this is going to be the last chance for Isaiah Thomas in New York. He's going to get probably...
The last chance for him in New York or the last chance for him in the NBA?
I think it's going to be the last chance in New York. I think somebody will ultimately take a chance, continue to take a chance with him. He probably won't... the next stop will be his last stop. But I think they're giving him a two-year window. And if he does not put them in the playoffs in the next 2 years, he's going to be gone.
Well, you very well may be on something there. He meaning Isaiah Thomas, has been the owner of the CBA. He has run the Toronto Raptors franchise, and now he is in New York attempting to turn around the Big Apple. And for the NBA, they would love for that to happen with the Knicks, because that has been their golden emerald, so to speak, in the league.
Absolutely.
Being in New York. But it has been a number of years since the Knicks have been competitive, let alone making it to the playoffs.
Yeah, you're not lying about that whatsoever. So I think this is something we really need to look and really pay attention over to the next couple of years, just to see how he's done. Obviously, the first thing you can say in his defense saying is he had to deal with a lot of garbage from previous management. Well, now he's been in there for a while, and he needs to produce now. If he doesn't, I think he will be let go.
Well, speaking of TNT and off the court action, Reggie Miller joins that crazy crew with TNT.
Yeah, that's going to be interesting. You know the one person I feel sorry for?
Who was that?
Ernie Johnson.
Well, that could be the case over the past few years, being in the same studio with the round mound of rebound, Charles Barkley.
Yeah, but you got three talkers. He won't get a word jazz-wise. Now, don't get me wrong, Barkley used to just overtake a conversation anyway, but now you got Reggie Miller. Man, that is going to be nice. And here's another thing. What if they ever have, like, a two-on-two basketball game? You throw Ernie Miller out. You throw Ernie Johnson out. You got the Millers versus Barkley and Kenny Smith. I'm picking the Millers every day because Cheryl Miller can steal ball. They got some players. If they're open to see, open TNT is going to win. So,
well, the NBA season promises to be one of the hottest that we've had in quite some time.
Oh, absolutely. And every day is going to be very important. And this whole season, because the parity and just as far as the stars just spread out evenly across the league, this is going to be one great season, and I don't think nobody's going to be truly disappointed of this season.
Well, talk about the fact that over the past few years, the Western Conference has been the dominant conference in the NBA. However, that is no longer the case. The East has at least pulled into a tie, if not slightly ahead, of the Western Conference.
I would not say a tie. I say they're slightly behind, which is a great improvement over the last couple of years, like you said, because the West was the dominant conference.
And you're stating that you think they're slightly behind. In the Western Conference, the dominant teams I see now are obviously the San Antonio Spurs. That is really the only dominant team I would see in the East. Would be the San Antonio Spurs. Of course, you could throw in Dallas, the possibility of Denver. But keep in mind, Denver did not come alive until George Karl joined them last season.
And that's why they're going to be so deadly, because they're going to have a
George
full Karl season.
George Karl has a tendency, as is the case with a number of coaches that have a big bark, that they wear out their welcome after a period of time. The players tune him out. So it's unlikely that will happen this season, but sooner or later they will tune him out in Denver, as they tuned him out in Milwaukee, as they tuned him out in Seattle prior. Phoenix Suns were a dominant team last season. However, with the trades and the injury to Amari Stoudemire, I can't put them in the same category as the San Antonio Spurs thus far.
Well, I'm not saying you need two. I think of, as far as you look at the teams, yes, San Antonio is the top team. But 2 through 10, you can go ahead and flip-flop that over. That can be more confusing than the BCS. You can flip that on a daily basis. That's how competitive the Western Conference is. Eastern Conference, it is competitive.
I can mess the dominant team in the Eastern Conference. Would be Miami Heat.
And right.
Behind the Miami Heat, you've got the New Jersey Nets. You've got the Washington Wizards, the Indiana Pacers.
But you got
Pistons,
you got less teams. You got less teams, Homer. You have less teams in the East.
I heard that.
Yeah, good. You have less teams in the East that is competitive in that nature than you do have in the West. That's why I said the West has a slight lead, because you're talking about dominant teams. And there's really only two dominant teams right now. That's San Antonio and Miami.
Miami. Exactly.
But as far as the competitive teams in that second tier, I think the West has maybe one or two more than they do in the East. And then you got the dweller sellers.
I see about 5 in the Western Conference. In the Eastern Conference, I see, the New Jersey Nets, 1, the Miami Heat, 2, Indiana Pacers, 3, Detroit Pistons, 4. And if you want to pull up a 5th one, it would be either Washington or Cleveland.
So you just proved my point. You just proved my point. You got to go ahead and search for that team. You got to search for that other team.
For that 15
to make it even with the West.
I wouldn't have a problem with matching either Washington or Cleveland with the number five seed in the East versus the number 5 seed in the West.
Yeah.
I just think that the West has lost its luster. There was a time
only
a couple of seasons ago when you talked about the elite teams, Dallas was always in there, and so was Sacramento, as well as the Lakers. But bad times have happened, as we are aware, with the Lakers. The Phoenix Suns, we mentioned that with the various trades and also the major impact of the loss of Amari Stoudemire due to his injury. So you are looking at one dominant team, and you're looking at good teams thereafter. And I think, no, I know the East easily matches the West at this particular point.
Well, of course now, because you want to go ahead and prove your point, but the problem is, during that the whole conversation, you just validated what I just said. I did not say that the West is totally, hands down, the best conference. I didn't say that at all. We just both proved that both conferences has one dominant team. But as far as competitive teams, you can know and name, as far as the West, has one or two more than the East. That's why I said the West has a slight lead as far as on the East. But the gap has definitely closed without a doubt over the last couple of years.
Well, I think they're neck and neck. I don't
of course you do.
I don't think that there is a...
Because you got to ask your homer team in there. Of course you do.
No, I said Cleveland or Washington as far as in that fifth spot.
Thank you. But either one. It can't be either one. It can't be either one, James.
I would put Cleveland number five, Washington number six.
Wow.
And
wow.
I think that the number five seed from the East could easily defeat the number five seed. Who would be the number five seed, in your opinion, from the West?
From the West?
Yeah, the number five seed.
Okay. San Antonio, Denver, Phoenix, Dallas.
That's four.
I'd say Dallas is probably going to be
five.
That's going to be probably my number five seed.
Okay. I think that Washington could defeat Dallas, because Dallas, unless they change this year and Avery Johnson has.
I'm sorry. You said Dallas is going to lose to who?
Cleveland or Washington could defeat Dallas.
Okay. I know it's early in the morning. Did you have your coffee?
Yes, I did.
Yeah, because
no, I don't drink coffee, actually.
So, and that explains
that.
That explains
Dallas
a lot.
Dallas is not a dominant team.
I'm not saying, but they can beat Washington and Cleveland.
Oh no, no.
Okay, moving on. Because I smell, we can argue this, and we have other topics. But I think we're going to get into this.
As we mentioned yesterday, Dallas was not even in, perhaps they were in yours, but they were not even in the best starting five of the teams that I had. As far as the best starting five, and as far as the best bench, they came in number three for me. I've forgotten where you placed them.
Well, I put Dallas in my bench, and I actually put Washington as my starting one, as far as one of my starting five, which you totally ridiculed as far as the center.
No, I didn't. Oh, Washington center?
Yes.
Oh yeah, well, they have a soft center. Yes.
Okay, we're gonna beat this. This is what we're gonna do. When the All Star game comes, when we do our podcast for the All Star during the All Star game.
Right.
We're gonna go ahead and see who is ranked. As far as if the playoffs ended at the All Star game, and then we can go ahead and have this battle again.
That sounds good to me. All right, moving on. There continues to be musical chairs being played at the Major League Baseball level, which is not unusual. Normally, you have a number of changes at the managerial level on the field, which is also true this season. However, what is a bit unusual this season is the number of general managers that have either left on their own accord or have been fired. The most recent and perhaps the biggest name out there has been the Wonder Boy of the Boston Red Sox, Theo Epstein, deciding to walk away from the Red Sox after allegedly agreeing upon a contract which will have paid him three times what he received last season. The story being that he could not get along with Lucchese, and he decides to walk away. There's speculation that he will sit out perhaps a year as opposed to joining another team such as the Dodgers or some other team that's looking for, or the Philadelphia Phillies. They also have an opening at the general manager's position. Also, speaking of the Dodgers, the Los Angeles Dodgers owner fires the Podesta.
Yes.
Who fits into that new arena, that new realm of general managers, the young Ivy League general manager, vice president, etc.
Mm-hmm.
You know how leagues and teams copy each other, and that seems to be the trend right now, that the younger the better, with the most recent addition of John Daniels replacing John Hart in Dallas. With regards to his age, John Daniels is 28 years of age.
Yeah.
Now, I do have some problems with that. The problem is the young man just simply does not have that much experience, and there is something to be said about experience. Most of these guys are dealing with numbers, and they believe, and I can't remember the gentleman's name who wrote this book, but Billy Beane is a disciple of this, I think his last name is James.
Bill James.
Yeah.
Wrote
this book, and most of these players subscribe to that theory.
Mm-hmm.
You've got the Toronto general manager coming from that mode. As I just mentioned, the Dallas, not manager, but general manager. You've got the Dallas general manager in that same mode. A older and much more experienced situation in Oakland with Billy Beane. And then you have Paul DePodesta, who was formerly out in L.A., who did a nice job. They went to the playoffs last season, and then they just simply fell apart this year. But he made a number of controversial trades that appeared pretty good on paper but did not work on the field, and especially in the clubhouse. And now you have the wonder kid of all of them, Theo Epstein, who was instrumental in taking Boston to the playoffs last year and winning the World Series, deciding to walk away. I have nothing against the young general managers. Some of them are outstanding. But I'm just stating that oftentimes owners become myopic. And they have blinders on. And if one team is successful with one type of player, that's what they will do. And they will disregard other people who are qualified just as well.
Well, you got to look at it, and a lot of people keep on forgetting about this. Theo didn't make all the right moves when he was with Boston. Remember, his first year, the most controversial thing he decided to do was not go with a traditional closer. He wanted to go bullpen by committee because he was reading, he went by as far as what Bill James was talking about, and it bit him in the butt real badly. Once he realized it wasn't going to work, he went ahead and adjusted and made the right moves. Remember, a lot of people did not agree with him by trading Nomar.
Right.
And it worked out pretty well that Nomar came on, was traded, and having Orlando Cabrera, which really did help as far as defensive-wise, as far as winning that World Series. So, but I do believe that it was a lot more to do, and it didn't have nothing to do with baseball. I think it had to do with office politics, and that is the reason why he left. Now, as far as going ahead and taking a year off, you know, that is fine. A lot of people are saying, well, maybe the year off might help him and stuff like that, and he can go ahead and he's going to get another job.
Oh,
you win a World Series, you're going to have a job.
Absolutely.
And then he's going to see if he made the best decision in his life or was leaving his dream job the biggest mistake of his life. That's what's going to come down over to in the next 2 years, because he obviously is not going to be taking a job this year, and he's going to take whatever's opening as far as from 2 years from now. Now, what that opening is, you got to look at it and see how the team is, because, trust me, there will be some openings. So it's going to be very interesting to see. So, you know, yeah, was I a little shocked that he did it at the very last minute? I think a lot of people were. But, you know, Theo did prove the skeptics wrong, because a lot of people thought that was crazy to hire somebody who's there's players going to be older than him. And that's that old mindset, you know, that the older you are, the more knowledge you have. Well, that's proven not the case, because we can see in sports, period, a lot of people who have a lot of age and so-called experience has made some dumb mistakes.
Oh, absolutely.
And stupid mistakes.
There are no guarantees in life, and there are no perfect people in life either. Everyone makes their mistakes. You want to minimize those mistakes, and you want to learn from those mistakes. You don't want to repeat those same mistakes.
So I think a change of pace as far as going a little younger, and see, because it has proven to work. So I don't see nothing wrong.
It's not only their age that some people are opposed to the trend that seems to be going on in Major League Baseball now. It's the fact that they have very little experience in baseball. Most of their experience is from the business side of it, and a number of them have been anywhere from semi-successful to very successful, and the poster child for very successful is obviously Theo Epstein with the winning of the World Series in 2004 with the Red Sox.
Right.
Others have been successful as well. Paul D. Podesta, when the Dodgers went to the playoffs last season, and then he made a lot of controversial trades, as I mentioned earlier, and they fell off the map this year. As a result of it, they got rid of their manager, and part of that was conflict between the manager, Tracy, and Paul D. Podesta as well.
And that's kind of messed up. You have the man fire the manager and then turn around and fire him. They should have knew that was coming. They should have knew what they was doing.
Now, when you said they should have, now you're referring to the owner?
Yeah.
Because the owner also relies heavily on Tommy Lasorda.
Well, somebody knew that the general manager was going to get let go. That was not just a sudden change. And
I'm not certain that was true, because there had really been very few reports that was actually going to happen. There was speculation that it could happen, but most people anticipated that he was going to stay with D. Podesta at least through the upcoming season and see what was going to transpire. I think it was, from all reports, it was a surprise to D. Podesta as well. So I think the owner, and he seems to sometimes shoot from the hip, he's only owned the team for a couple of years, as a matter of fact. So he is still learning.
Yeah, just because there's no reports about it.
No, absolutely. I understand that.
I think the owner knew what he was doing.
That's all we can go on. Moving to the NFL and reviewing week number 8 in the NFL. There were some dramatic finishes. There was also a big-time shutout. And as I called it for old time's sake, for Wellington Mara with the New York Giants, and also the mysterious play of some NFL teams. Specifically, I'm referring to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and the Philadelphia Eagles, how they look so good one week and just lose to teams that they should beat the following week, and in some cases lose rather drastically.
Well, you can also throw in the Washington Redskins as well.
Correct.
Because, now granted, they was playing basically a Pop Warner team in the 49ers and scored 52 on them, and the fourth team in history to score 51 week and then get shut out the following week. They just look like they didn't show. They just did not want to play this game. But then you also add on with how the Giants was very, very pumped for that game.
They were emotional with the Giants.
They was absolutely emotional about this game, and just hearing about as far as what a great man that owner was. And he was an owner that really was wanting to be silent, because I did not know all the stuff he not only helped as far as the Giants, but the league, period, and the industry in itself. And he was just a very quiet, not even a giant, a titan of football. And I can understand the emotion that all those players played in that game.
Well, especially the players who had been with the team for a while and had an opportunity to know him.
Yeah, you knew Washington was in trouble when the first play of scrimmage, Tiki Barber went 50, almost scored a touchdown by going 57, 58 yards on the very first run. You knew right then and there it was going to be a long day for the Washington Redskins.
Well, it was a long day for a number of teams. Specifically, I'm talking about the Philadelphia Eagles as they go down 28-0 and to the Denver Broncos, and yet come back and make it a 28-21 game and almost tied the game.
Yeah.
And then they're blown away in the second half and lose to Denver 49-21.
I think
what's going on with the Eagles?
I don't know if you noticed this, but there was reports in Philly. As far as there were skylights flashing in the air, because people in Philly have hit the panic button. They are hitting the panic button. They're hitting the bat phone. They are in distress. They are really, really worried about this team. And you look at as far as them being very slow starters and as far as on their offensive game, that really, really do concern them. Their defense haven't been playing the greatest, and you need these stretch or these lucky things to happen. 2 weeks ago, let's be honest, the only reason that they won was a block kick, a lucky bounce to a defensive who ran in for a touchdown, and a questionable fumble call in the next series with the Chargers. If you don't get those lucky bounces.
Well, they also won because of their defense. Anytime you shut down LaDainian Tomlinson, and by most accounts is the best running back in the NFL, when you shut him down to 17 yards and no touchdowns after Tomlinson goes 18 straight weeks of scoring touchdowns and generally putting up close to, if not more than 100 yards per game, their defense had a big part to play in that.
But you take that all to
the side. They lost their defense for some reason the following week. That's the perplexing part, how they can go from such a defensive game that in week 7 and then totally lose it in week 8.
But fine, you go ahead and agree with you on that part. But then you also got to look at it. The reason they was in that game was the defense, because the offense wasn't playing worth a crap. And then you go into week 8, the offense wasn't playing, once again, worth a crap the first. Like, they forgot they had a game at 3 o'clock to play the first half. Donovan went 0 for 12. Now, granted, he was getting rushed a ton. But someplace, he just flat out overthrew or underthrew his receivers. That offense going 80% pass is not working. And they're going to have to change that immediately. Or they're not going to make the playoffs.
How much do you attribute to the fact on the defensive side of the ball for the Eagles, how much do you attribute to the fact that their defensive backfield is in a state of flux? They have a number of nagging injuries, so much so that Lito Shepard, one of their cornerbacks, was out this week, so that did not help. And going into the season, the Philadelphia Eagles had the best defensive backfield in the NFL.
Well, that's key because obviously they're getting hit. If you notice, they're getting hit with a lot of deep balls. They're getting hit with a lot of deep balls, and they're also getting hit with a lot of quick slants. And there's nobody be able to catch them up on those quick slants up the middle of the field, but they also getting hit with if a quarterback can throw the deep ball on them, they are exploiting that. So you add those two things, and right there, you're keeping your defense on for a long period of time. Then you compound that with the offense doing three and outs or get a first down and don't contain a drive. Now your defense is tired, your offense is not doing it, and it's a recipe for trouble.
And the NFC North Toilet Bowl game occurred between Chicago and Detroit, and Chicago wins that in overtime, 19-13.
Yeah,
and that was the most dramatic finish of the week with the interception and the run back.
Well, you throw before even all of that, the whole controversy with we almost had a new version of the tuck rule because of the whole controversy of. There was a fumble. There was a touchdown. Everybody's about to celebrate. Hold on. Let's do a conference. Okay, I'm going to talk to the Lions coach. I'm not going to say nothing to the Bears coach. I'm going to throw a flag. Incomplete. Intentional grounding. Then the Bears challenge, which he should have knew he was going to lose that challenge anyway because they did the conference anyway. All of that really was trouble. But the biggest problem with the Lions is the quarterbacks are in a flux. They don't trust Harrington no more. So they're going to put in a 95-year-old Garcia, who's about 70% well anyway, getting physically tattooed all game. He got hit so many times, I almost had a slight concussion. The reason he threw that ball where he threw it to, He honestly saw three wide receivers open. It was the problem was it was the same person, and he threw it to the right person instead of to the middle. That was the reason why Tillman was able to get that interception, and the Bears are in first place. Unbelievable.
And now there are no longer any teams that have not had at least one victory in the NFL. Houston getting off the block and winning their first game. You know, it had been rumored during the preseason that the Cleveland Browns were indeed a bad team. And then, you know, those same whispers surfaced once again about 3 weeks ago. And they score about as much as Billy Graham at a lesbian convention would over the past 2 weeks. After Sunday's 19-16 loss to the previously winless Houston Texans, it has now been confirmed that the Cleveland Browns are indeed a bad, bad team.
See, that's just the home ran you, because we knew that a long time ago. You were just not the one just being convinced. You finally jumped off the Browns bandwagon.
It's somewhat of a respectable team, but that is not going to be the case for this season.
Did you hurt a hamstring jumping off the bandwagon?
No, I'm not jumping off the bandwagon. I mean, once you're a fan, you're a fan. But I do realize, and I'm looking at the realistic situation. But perhaps the craziest game of the entire weekend, and one which a number of people probably lost their shirts, was San Francisco defeating Tampa Bay without scoring a touchdown. 15-10.
I couldn't believe that myself. I actually watched that game, and I was like, this is some bad football. I was willing to watch the Bears, and I don't watch the Bears, and I'm from Chicago. And I was like, wow, this is some really bad football. And San Francisco was able to pull it out without even scoring a touchdown. It was just simply amazing.
Well, parity is indeed in the NFL.
And then
what Tagliabue wanted, he certainly has.
He got it. And then you got to look at the most crucial injury of the week with Donovan, with Culpepper, basically what I call having the triple crown tear. MCL, ACL, and PCL. It looked bad to me.
Murphy's Law with regards to Minnesota, whatever can happen will happen.
And it definitely did. And like I said, I think one of the people who's absolutely glad he's not in that situation no more is Randy Moss. He's not having the best year, but it could have been a whole lot worse. Could you imagine this stuff going on with Randy Moss on that team?
Well, you know, a number of these issues would have been blamed on Randy Moss as well had he been there.
Exactly. So
it's that he's not.
And it's a long road of recovery for Culpepper, because it's not that he's out for the year. He's out for a year. They're talking about 12 months because of those multiple tears. So wish him a speedy recovery, because he is definitely one of the young, great quarterbacks of the league, and we want him to get back as soon as he possibly can and help Minnesota go on. But there was actually rumors, believe it or not, that Denny Green was trying to make a trade for Culpepper. I don't know what he was going to give up, probably McCow, but there was rumors going around that Denny Green was trying to get a trade for Culpepper.
And this was prior to the injury?
Yeah, this was definitely prior to the injury. So it was either he was trying to do it before week six, which is the NFL deadline, or there was slowly talks talks to begin at the end of the season. But now that has been basically put in limbo right now.
Speaking of Dante Culpepper, there are five black NFL quarterbacks, which means it's 15% of the quarterbacks in the NFL are black. Michael Vick, Steve McNair, Donovan McNabb, Dante Culpepper, Byron Leftwich, which doesn't say that much for the NFL. However, it has been worse. And as always, this week we do our player profiles in the form of the Bronze Pioneers, where we talk about one of those pioneer black quarterbacks in the early days of the NFL. This week's Bronze Pioneer Many black athletes of the past are remembered and recognized as symbols of struggle for freedom, justice, and equality, such as Jack Johnson, Joe Louis, Jesse Owens, Jackie Robinson. They all resonate with the public. However, such players as Fritz Pollard, Kenny Washington, Marion Motley, Dick Night Train Lane have yet to be afforded similar status. Sport Flight's Bronze Pioneer is in recognition of these black paragons of football nobility. This week, our Bronze Pioneer is Charles Brackets. Since the advent of professional football, there have always been quotas and restrictions for black athletes. Quarterback, center, and defensive signal callers were generally reserved for white players. In 1955, Charles Brackens became the fifth black player to play an NFL game at the quarterback position. Prior black players received very limited opportunities. Brackens' experience mirrored those same limitations. Brackens attended Prairie View A&M in Texas and was drafted in the 16th round by the Green Bay Packers. Brackens' career totals at Prairie View A&M reflected 269 completions for 3,500 yards. Brackens played but one season with the Green Bay Packers in 1955, summoned to the quarterback position during a lopsided loss to the hands of the Cleveland Browns. Brackens' extent of play was two incomplete passes. Charles Brackens was never to don another NFL uniform after the 55 season. Charles Brackens and other luminaries paved the road for today's black players. This has been a Sport Flight FYI, Bronze Pioneers. Sport Flight's black college scores from Division I AA. Norfolk State spanks Howard 26-7. Grambling State manhandles Texas Southern 58-21. Tennessee State stumbles versus Sanford 31-11. South Carolina State defeats Delaware State 24-3. Savannah State loses a heartbreaker to Central State 28-27. Alabama A&M takes state honors at the Magic City Classic versus Alabama State 31-28. Mississippi Valley State crushes Prairie View A&M 58-13. Florida A&M dispatches Morgan State 27-16. Arkansas Pine Bluff over Jackson State 64-36. And finally, Bethune-Cookman rolls over North Carolina A&T 54-17. For Division II black college scores, rankings, standings, and conference players of the week, click on urbancollegesports.com. One topic that we need to discuss, and we're running close to our time, is Notre Dame last week extended Charlie Weiss's contract. Charlie Weiss is currently 5-2. Tyrone Willingham, during his first season at Notre Dame, went 8-0, and he received the boot after 3 years on a five-year contract. My question to you, is there an imbalance here, or as some people state, it was pure racism?
Well, I don't know if it was pure racism, but it really does smell fishy. Because you look at the 5-2 record of Weiss, those five wins he was supposed to win. He was. You look at the combined records of his schedule so far. They're about, if I'm not mistaken, about 5 or 6 games below 500. Now, you turn around and look at Willingham's first year when he went 8-0. Six of those teams went on to play bowl games that year and had a combined record of 40 games over 500. So, and a lot of people saying, well, the speculation was that a lot of teams, NFL teams, was going to go ahead and consult.
Exactly. That's what a number of commentators are stating, that he had the hammer and he used the hammer. And
they was going to consult. They was going to ask him if he was interested in doing an NFL team, coming back to play to coach an NFL team, because now he's such a high regard as a prospect, as an NFL coach. But when he was actually an assistant coach in the NFL, he didn't get too many opportunities as far as interviews for jobs. But guess what? They was going to do the same thing with Pete Carroll's. They was going to do the same thing with Bob Stoops. Bob Stoops has been turning down offers for the NFL ever since he won a championship.
How many opportunities do you think he'll turn down this winter?
Well, who's that?
Bob Stoops.
Oh, trust me, if they offer him something, he might take it.
I'm being sarcastic. I don't think he'll have any
That's why I said if somebody offers him something, he's going to take it.
I don't think he'll have any opportunities because of the poor season they had. I would be surprised if he's in the mix when there are openings. And as you know, every year there are anywhere from 5 to 9 openings at the head coaching position.
Yeah, there's going to be definitely discussions, but nobody's going to be. It's as far as Stoops, he's not going to be on a lot of people's top 5 list as he was a couple of years ago.
Well, wrapping up this discussion on the Charlie Weiss situation, as far as racism, there is obviously some racism there. Unfortunately, there is racism in a lot of things that happen on a day-to-day basis, not only in sports but in real life. As I have often stated, sports is but a microcosm of what goes on in the real world today. My problem with topics of this discussion is that there are hundreds of sports shows on the radio today, and the majority of them, 99.9%, are hosted by white males. They never see racism in any one particular situation, and that's because they generally have blinders on and it does not affect them. So I get you know how I get upset. You and I have had these discussions before.
Mm-hmm.
How I get upset with them because they never see racism, and if someone states there is some form of racism and whatever happens in some area of sports, they say you're playing the race card. My thing is, part of the racism is having all of these white male show hosts throughout the country. You're telling me that there are not more blacks that are capable of hosting sports shows, and that's why I enjoy our show, because we do it from a different perspective. And let's just call it like it is. We do it from a black perspective, and I think we need more of that. And let me get off of my soap box, so to speak, because I could go on, and we're up against the clock. This week's Sport Flight's aficionado question of the week, in light of the fact that the NBA season did open last night, our question pertains to the NBA. Name the only NBA player to average a triple-double in points, rebounds, and assists for one season. Now, that should be a very easy question, but I thought we'd start off the season giving you an easy one at that particular juncture.
Dude, that's beyond easy.
Well, I've given them some tough ones the last couple of weeks, so I thought I'd throw a little easy one out there for
you. Just being nice to the folks.
Absolutely.
That's just so kind of you.
Wrapping up this week, we take a look at how we did in our projections for last week's games. I was at 3, you were at 4, so you continue to lead. Overall, the totals are Sean 28, James 24. Our predictions for the week, next week, which is week 9 in the NFL. The first game, the 3-4 Oakland Raiders travel to the 4-3 Kansas City Chiefs. This is a divisional rivalry. The Raiders have had a tough time with the Chiefs as of late. Your pigskin pick.
I'm going with Kansas City on this one. I think just too much offense in Kansas City's favor.
I will go with the Raiders with an upset in this particular instance. Game 2, the 6-2 Cincinnati Bengals travel to the 2-5 Baltimore Ravens. Surprisingly, Baltimore played Pittsburgh tough Monday night, losing a heartbreaker 20-19 in the last few seconds of the game. How do you see this game with the Bengals riding high at 6-2?
I think with Ray Lewis and Ed Reed possibly going to be out for another game, and their running game has just been abysmal, I'm picking the Bengals in this one.
You're taking the Bengals?
Yes.
And this particular one is going to be in Baltimore. Why not be dangerous, live on the wild side? I'll go with Baltimore since they are in Baltimore. As well as they played Monday night, if they play as well Sunday as they played Monday night, they can defeat the Bengals. So I'll go out on the limb and go with the Ravens.
If you just want to forfeit this whole weekly thing, go right ahead and just concede now.
well, the way the NFL goes, no one knows what's going to happen.
On paper,
it looks good, but in the reality, need I remind you of Tampa Bay and San Francisco? Need I remind you of Week 1's victory by the Miami Dolphins? Anything is subject for an upset.
Okay. All right. You've got
Game 3, Carolina Panthers, 5-2, visit the Tampa Bay Bucks, 5-2. Another divisional rivalry. Your pick.
I'm going with the Panthers. You look at what the Bucks did last week. They're going to change that up, but I think the Panthers are going to be too strong. MVP candidate Steve Smith is going to bust out and have a great game this week.
Well, I think a lot of it has to do with if the Cadillac is still going to be in the shop. If the Cadillac is rolling, then I would anticipate the Tampa Bay Bucks will defeat the Panthers. So you said that you're going to take the Panthers?
I'm taking the Panthers.
Okay, Sean is going to take the Panthers. It's going to be in Tampa Bay. Why not, for the heck of it, make it more advantageous? I'll go with the Bucks. Game 4. The 4-3 Philadelphia Eagles, coming off of one of their worst losses in the past three seasons, versus the Washington Redskins, 4-3, also coming off of a loss. Your pick.
I think Washington is going to turn it around as far as getting shut out. I just see them just getting work this week and proving that last week was just a fluke. So I'm picking Washington in this one.
You're taking Washington in this. The Eagles seem to be on a seesaw. They're up and down each week. They are going to be in Washington. Can Washington's defense hold? This is one that you're taking Washington, that Sean. I see the Eagles bouncing back, if for no other reason, their pride. So I'll go with the Eagles. Besides, if I pick the same game as you, how will I ever catch you?
Yeah, I think your strategy this week is either I'm going to be able to tie or I'm just going to get so far back there's just no way I'm going to win. So you're pulling it all in, huh?
Well, it's only week 9, so I have 7 additional weeks to catch up, so that's not a problem.
Well, you're getting a little risky here.
Not at all. Hey, you got to take chances.
And you're proving that point this week.
If you want to run with the big dogs, you can't piss like a puppy.
There you go again.
All right. The Indianapolis Colts, the only undefeated team, 7-0. They travel to their arch nemesis up in New England, the New England Patriots, 3-3. This is going to be one heck of a Monday night game.
This,
your pick,
is the game of the year right now. And one particular group who's going to be enjoying this is the 1972 Dolphins, because they're going to be able to pop the cork, because New England is going to go ahead and give the Colts their first loss. I'm picking New England.
All right, you're going to go with New England.
I'm going with New England.
And
now
you know
I want to see what you're going to do.
Belichick and how I love the New England Patriots. However, what did I just say? If you want to run with the big dogs, you can't piss like a puppy.
Now, the last time you picked against New England, what happened?
I lost.
Okay, I'm just making sure.
But it wasn't a team the caliber of the Colts. The Colts have got to grow up. They've got to beat New England at some time or another. And what better time than now, with the Patriots having so many injuries and being up and down from week to week? I've got to go with the Colts' defense. And with Manning.
Wow, that just still doesn't make sense to me. The Colts defense.
I know, it doesn't sound right, does it?
No, it doesn't.
No. But when you put it in the context of Tony Dungy's team, then it comes into focus a bit more.
Yeah, that's like saying you pick Baltimore's offense. It just doesn't make sense, but okay.
All right. Once again, we thank those listeners who have joined us this week. And in closing, never has so few owed so much to so many. Peace! We're out of here.
Sportflight is now approaching its final destination. Please bring all seats to an upright position. Seatbelts are to remain fastened until we come to a complete stop. Thank you for flying Sportflight magazine. We trust you have enjoyed your experience and will keep your dial locked in its current position until next week. when you once again board Sport Flight, a different sports perspective.